morning is Bob Chase, President of the National Education Association, and our topic is public education and the new unions. Bob, glad to have you on the show.
Thank you. Glad to be with you.
Let's begin by, maybe you can give us your account of the current state of public education in this country.
I think we're seeing some positive changes happening in some of the major cities, for example, around the country, in New York, Chicago, L.A., we're seeing some changes. We just saw some test results that were released yesterday in Washington, D.C., where finally we're seeing a positive upswing as far as reading scores, especially in the early years. So I think that a lot of the efforts that have been put into place in the last 2 or 3 years to effectuate the kind of positive change that we want to see happening is beginning to pay off. There's still a way to go. I must say that the vast majority of schools in this country are doing a very fine job. There are some that aren't, and in those problem areas we're spending a lot of effort and energy in an attempt to improve them, and as I said, I think that our attempts are starting to pay off.
Okay, but in saying that the attempts are starting to pay off indicates that at least at some point in the past you think there were some fairly serious problems, perhaps, with public education.
Oh, I think there's no question about the fact that there have been individual locations, school districts, where there have been difficulties and problems for a whole host of reasons. Some have been poor management. Some has really been a lack of community involvement, where schools have not gone out of the way to make sure that, in fact, the community and parents are involved. In addition to that, we've had, in too many places, people who are not teaching within their area of certification. That has created problems. So there have been a host of problems. Lack of funding in some areas has been problematical. When you look at all of those issues and understand that educating a child and running a school district is a very complex issue, then it's not a surprise, actually, that there would be areas that were problematical. What is happening now, though, however, is that we are looking at those problem areas. Things are improving. I think we should be celebrating that improvement, talking about that improvement, and moving on so that the improvement will, in fact, continue.
Okay, a number of people in the past, and in fact in the present, who complained about education seem to think that the fundamental problem at some level is with the idea of reliance on public education. And yet I take it that the NEA is deeply committed to maintenance and strengthening of public education.
Absolutely. Public education has been one of the miracles of our society. If you look at this country and you look at the fact that it's a country that's the most diverse country in the world, the size of the country, the fact that education is not a centralized system as it is in most countries. It's very, very localized or run at the state level, but in most places very, very localized. The fact that public education has served this country so well is really one of the miracles of our democracy, I think. You know, it's fascinating to me because it was just 3, 4, 5 years ago when people were saying such things as the fact that we were not doing well, particularly well economically, was as a result of poor educational achievement in this country and so on. Now we're doing the best in the world economically, and I'm not hearing many people say that's because of the high quality of education in this country. If it was the reason for our difficulties, then obviously it should also be one of the reasons for the improvement of the quality of education. At any rate, the fact is that public schools serve this country incredibly well. 90% of all youngsters in America are public school students. The fact is that public schools have taken young people from enormously diverse backgrounds, brought them together, and educated them very, very well. Now, are there problems? The answer to that is yes. We've talked a little bit about those before. Unfortunately, some of the people who are anti-public education or who speak about the negatives in public education truly want to see another system in place, would prefer to see alternatives to the public education system rather than improvements in the public education system. And that's an unfortunate step. We hear a lot about vouchers or other alternatives for young people going to public education, into public schools, but in the long term, no matter how many schemes there may be out there, the majority of our young people are still going to be going to public schools.
Okay.
And we have to make sure that those public schools are providing quality opportunities for all kids.
Okay, and it's not just that the majority are going to be going to them, that there's something about the nature of public education that is beneficial. For example, you mentioned the connection between public education and democracy. Could you elaborate on that a bit?
Sure. In a democratic society, in order for it to work, people have to be well-educated. Where people have an opportunity to vote for their representatives or to vote directly on issues, there has to be an understanding of what those issues are. An educated populace is absolutely crucial to a democracy. We can go all the way back to Jefferson and see some of the things that he wrote about the importance of that in the continuation of a democracy. An uneducated populace will not serve a democratic society particularly well, and that's been proven throughout history in those places where democracy has been attempted and has not worked. In addition to that, since we do have such an incredibly diverse society and a diverse student body in this country, the importance of people getting along, learning about each other, all of those things become particularly important as well. And I dare say that there are now really no other places within our institutions, our societal institutions, where people do come together like they do in public schools. So here we have an opportunity to educate not only on the subjects that we're talking about in education, but also to celebrate the differences among people and teaching people how to get along together. It's interesting to note that within the not-too-distant future, there will not be a majority in this country. We, I think, will all probably live to see a time when our population will be so diverse that there will be no single population within our society that will have 50%. That is a very unusual situation. No other country in the world has that kind of a demographic profile. So it becomes particularly important for us to understand that public education in situations like that have an increasing importance in order to meet the needs of a very, very diverse and democratic society.
Okay, so it's going to have political goals in promoting democracy. It's going to have social goals in improving the ability of each student to get along with other students from diverse backgrounds, and it's going to have personal goals for the students or personal benefits in terms of preparing them for life as a citizen.
And preparing them for life as citizens in a very significant way. I don't want to leave the impression that the primary role of our schools is to educate our young people, and that's to educate them to high standards and have programmatic opportunities in place that will help those students achieve those high standards. In order for our young people to take their place in our economy today, the base of knowledge that they have to is very different than it was 10, 15, 20 years ago, much less 50 years ago. And that can only be done if, in fact, we have high standards and hold students and those of us who are teaching accountable to achieving those high standards.
All right, let's talk about that for a bit. I mean, one of the goals that you talked about just then, one of the goals you talk about in your literature is the importance of high standards. Could you elaborate a bit more? I mean, standards, do you mean content? Do you mean reasoning skills? Both?
Both. Okay. Both. First of all, I think when we talk about high standards, we have to understand that a young person will achieve to the level that's expected of them. So if you expect someone to achieve high standards, to work to the very best of their ability, in most instances that will happen. If you accept less than that, you'll get less than that. So the high standards and the achievement of high standards becomes particularly important. And it is in subject or content matter. It's very important for youngsters to have the knowledge base that they need in order to take their place in society. And in addition to that, those critical skills, critical thinking skills, the ability to reason, all of those things become particularly important. Futurists say that in the future, a person will not be just changing jobs 3, 4, or 5 times in their life. They'll be changing occupations. The whole area that was doing things totally different. And if you are going to be in a situation where that's the case, then thinking skills and reasoning skills become particularly important. Skills on how to study, how to learn, all of those things are very, very important, and we must teach young people those to a much higher degree than was necessary in the past.
Okay, what's the best way to try to reach these high standards? Do we look for national standards? Do we look for state standards, local standards?
We're supportive, and I'm supportive of voluntary standards at the national level. And I say that because we have a very, very mobile society. If, in fact, we saw most of the children staying in the community in which they were born and not moving and so on, that mobility factor wouldn't be there, and we may not have to look at a broader concept of standards. But, in fact, that's not the case. And with this kind of mobility, I think it's important for us to look at national standards. Voluntary, yes, because our culture and history has been one in which local control of public schools and state control of public schools has been very important. I'm not saying by any stretch of the imagination that should be changed. So when I say national standards, I'm not saying federal standards. I'm saying national standards that people can agree to and then establish processes in which they will achieve those goals or those standards. But those processes should be developed at the state and local level.
Okay, so the state and local level should set the basic standards, but the idea of the national standards is not so much that each state has to meet them, but that there's sort of a benchmark, that if a state doesn't meet them, then they have some reason to think that perhaps their education isn't doing so well.
Absolutely, you know, and that brings in questions of accountability.
Well, in fact, that's important. Elaborate on that, because that's the next issue that I wanted to explore.
I think it's important for all of us to step up to the plate and be willing to be held accountable for that which we do. And that means parents for their parenting skills. That means policymakers for the decisions they make as it relates to policy. That means the decisions that are made as far as funding. And that means those of us who are in the classroom teaching or whatever work role we may have in schools, living up to our responsibilities and being held accountable for our success as well. You know, we're talking about kids. We're talking about very young people who rely on adults, who rely on a community to provide them with what's necessary to be successful later on in their life. And we should be held accountable for doing that. We have no problem with that.
I'd like to elaborate on that further in a second, but let me pause briefly for the benefit of anyone who may have tuned in late. This is Ideas and Issues. My guest this morning is Bob Chase, President of the National Education Association, and we're talking about public education and the new unionism. You say the teachers, the policymakers, parents ought to be responsible, ought to be accountable to their children. How do we do that? How do we make each of these people accountable?
Well, one of the ways we won't do it is if we all go off in our individual silos and operate in ways where we do not work together and collaborate together, and that's been something that unfortunately has been more and more common in the last decade or so, where people aren't doing an enormous amount of interaction about issues of importance like this, so that everybody acts kind of on his or her own without understanding the impact of the other segment of, in this case, the community as it relates to education. Between birth and 18, a child is in school only 9% of the time. Now, I know that there's time for sleep and all that mixed in on that other 91%, but still in all, only 9% of the time. So to think that schools are in a position to do everything and have only 9% of a child's life between 0 and 18 to do it is a huge mistake. So it becomes more of a family and community process that we have to involve ourselves with. The relationship between parent and teacher, parent and school, is particularly important. And now with our society, one in which both parents are working in most cases, or where there are a lot of single-parent families where the single parent is working, the traditional way of developing programmatic opportunities for parent and teacher to work together have to be looked at and have to be reviewed. Having a parent come to school, for example, during the course of the workday is much more difficult than it used to be. So there needs to be other opportunities to do it, and this is where community comes in. I mean, businesses, for example, I think businesses should look at the possibility of giving parents some time off so that they can interact with their child's school. It, in the long term, serves businesses' interests well, I think. So I think that's something that can and should be done. School personnel have to be willing to meet with parents and community outside of the school setting. Look at other ways in which we can do that in order to accommodate the very, very different lifestyles of people today. So it's a... when I talk about accountability, you know, you can't hold a parent accountable under whatever, or the parent's going to be fired. You know, once you're a parent, you're a parent. But what you can do is develop opportunities for that parent to be more involved, and that's everyone's business. As far as teachers, should teachers be held accountable for the work that they do? Sure. Are the accountability systems that are in place now in every school district in this country appropriate? No. Do there need to be changes? Yes, there need to be changes. And we're willing to work with people to bring about those changes. As a matter of fact, that's part of our new unionism approach to things, where we look at quality teaching as being a very, very crucial component of our work. And that means moving into teacher preparation in a much more wholesale way than we have in the past to make sure that that's good. Pre-service education, professional development for teachers is particularly important, and traditionally it's not been particularly good. Processes of evaluation need to be reviewed and looked at, providing new teachers with the kind of mentoring that they need becomes particularly important in order to ensure quality. One of the biggest problems we have is maintaining people in the profession. Data shows us that this year, new teachers who began teaching this year, especially in urban areas, within 5 years, up to 50% will have left. That's not a very good way to maintain a quality workforce. So we've got to look at all of those issues and see what we can do to improve in those areas, and that's part of the accountability system that we need to be looking at. For folks to look at accountability systems as being just the results of tests without looking at all of these variables that go into impacting on that is a big mistake. It's a complex issue.
Yeah, I want to explore this more because I think it's very fascinating. I mean, in some sense, teachers have always been accountable. There are lots of forms that you have to fill out to show that you've done your job. But part of the problem with a lot of those forms is it's not clear that they measure anything significant or important. All they do is take up time.
That's right.
I mean, sometimes we look for minimalistic ways of showing accountability, which in the end shows nothing. One of the things you mentioned, and one of the things I've seen in some of your documentation, is that you think part of what new unionism means is a willingness to police your own, a willingness
Absolutely.
To say that, you know, Sue or Bob or Joe may be well-meaning and they might know things, but they're just not a very effective teacher and they shouldn't be around.
We started talking about that a year and a half ago. I mean, we had talked about it a lot before then, too, but I mean in depth about a year and a half or so ago, and brought some new positions to our annual convention last year. And the delegates to our convention changed the policies that we had so that now we are on record as in favor of peer assistance and review for those local school districts that want to go in that direction. Obviously, it's got to be a local decision. It's very interesting to see what's happened over the last year. Just a month ago, the city of Columbus, our affiliate in Columbus that has had a peer assistance and review program in place for over a decade now, held a conference co-sponsored by the local association, the school district, and Ohio State University. And there were 500 people who came from 30 different states who wanted to look at and this process to see how it works. We think now that there are the beginnings of a peer assistance interview in up to about 50 school districts around the country, which is a big jump of over a year ago. It is a relatively new approach for our members to look at and to take, and it certainly is out of the box as far as a typical union approach to things. We're very pleased with the improvement that has been made, the direction that people are taking. One of the good parts about this conference I referenced a couple of minutes ago was the fact that it was done by a local association. It wasn't something that the national had to put together, but a local association did it. And one of the reasons Columbus did it was because it had over 1,200 phone calls from local association leaders and school districts around the country wanting to know what their system was and how it worked. And rather than try to answer those all individually, one of the things they decided to do was, well, let's put together a conference, and it was excellent. It was very well done. In September, the NEA and the AFT are jointly sponsoring a conference on teacher quality, where we are inviting teams of people from state level and from school districts to come to this conference to look at teacher quality issues, to develop programs that they may want to use back in their state or at the local level. So the whole issue of quality has become very, very important to us. From my perspective, I think it's crucial. It's foolish unionism indeed, where issues of quality are left to someone else. Quality in the long term, quality of the product that you produce in the long term is what assures your members their jobs and also assures that public education is successful. So quality is a very, very big issue.
Okay, so the two parts of this, one, you talked about peer assistance and peer review. The peer review is being willing to say at times someone's just not doing their job and they either need to get up to snuff or else find another job.
Right.
But the other thing of peer assistance refers to something you mentioned earlier, at least in part, the idea of mentoring.
That's right.
That if someone's going to come into the public schools, they need some help. Could you elaborate on that idea?
Sure. There are, by the way, many more places that do peer assistance than do the combination of peer assistance and review. Traditionally, the mentoring of new teachers has been very bad, if at all. You know, I tell the story of when I first began teaching what it was like, and the fact is that, to shorten the story, after a couple of days of meetings, I was given my class rosters and my books and said, go forth and teach, and was expected to do the same thing that someone who had been teaching for 20 years had been doing with the same number of students, only because I was new, I didn't have my own classroom. I had to move from classroom to classroom. And also, because I was new, I had some of the more difficult students. There's a lot of built-in failure there. We know now that mentoring is particularly important. And the degree to which there is mentoring varies from place to place, state to state, and local education agency to local education agency. However, it's becoming more and more important. The Columbus model that I talked about a second ago has both peer assistance and review in it, so that the person who is doing the assisting also has the opportunity to recommend whether the person will get full-time employment after the probationary period is over. And people who are experienced teachers can be referred to this program if they're having difficulty. It must be understood that the goal of both of these programs is the success of the individual teacher involved. It's not a program that's kind of an I gotcha program. It's a program that says, okay, here we have a professional here. We want to help that professional succeed. We're going to do whatever we can to assist that professional to succeed. But if they don't, then they have to move on.
You've already said a number of things that that are related to your emphasis on the new unionism. Perhaps you could just talk a little bit more generally about what you take that to be.
Really, there's three or four major components to it. One component is attitude. It may not seem particularly important at first blush, but it underpins everything. We have to make sure that in our association, in our union, as well as in our school districts, we create a culture where risk-taking and creativity are the norm rather than the exception, where it's okay to make mistakes. And that's a very important concept, because if you're in a situation where it's not okay to make mistakes, then what you will do is what you have always done. And when we need change, that's a big mistake. So attitude is one of them. The second part of it is collaboration. Collaboration with school districts. Where collective bargaining exists, we're seeing more and more school districts and local unions doing interest-based bargaining, which is very, very different than adversarial bargaining. It creates an atmosphere that's very different and much more cooperative, and that's something that we believe needs to be in place in order to meet the needs of changing our schools to meet our students' needs. A third component of it also is reaching out to people we haven't reached out to in the past, the business community, for example. over the last couple of years, I've had an opportunity to meet with some of the major CEOs in this country. And although we may have some differences of opinion on some methods or on some processes and so on, the goals are the same. And where we can agree and work together to enhance public education, then it needs to be done. Keep in mind that only about 25% of the American adult population have children in schools. And yet 75%, the other 75% have a great deal to say about what goes on in those schools. So for us not to reach out to a total community, not just the parental community, is particularly important and something that we must do. And as I said, the fourth element is quality. Quality is absolutely key. Quality in teacher preparation, quality in mentoring, quality in professional development, quality as far as evaluation is concerned, quality programs in our schools. If we see programs that aren't, in fact, meeting the needs of our students, then they should be done away with. And those are the types of things that we as a union must become involved in.
In the past, when people think of unions, you think of entirely adversarial relationships. Mm-hmm. Do you have any stories you could tell where the members, where the union has made a proposal for quality that they perhaps wouldn't have made in the past, and how it's been received by a local school board.
Right nearby here in Montgomery County this year. In Montgomery County, Maryland, they opened up a whole new process of negotiations this year and got into interest-based bargaining rather than adversarial bargaining. They were able to bring closure to their contract without any outside assistance. That was the first time ever since they've been bargaining that they did not need a mediator or an arbitrator to come in and resolve the dispute. There are now in place joint committees as a result of this kind of bargaining where people are working together to effectuate the kind of changes that are needed in the district. We've seen that happening in many places all over the country. I was in a school district in Minnesota earlier this year where they also had a history of negative collective bargaining, and this year they turned it around, finished their bargaining in record time. The relationship between the school district and the union has changed dramatically. It's that kind of thing that has to happen in order for us to improve the education of our kids. If the most important stakeholders in a child's education are fighting with each other and arguing with each other, then that becomes the focal point of what's happening rather than the quality of the education of our youngsters. So if we can minimize the adversarial nature of things and maximize the collaborative work so that we can work towards providing every child with the opportunity to receive the very best education possible, then we'll be doing our job.
Thank you very much for appearing in the show.
My pleasure.
I've been speaking today with Bob Chase, President of the National Education Association. This is Hugh LaFollette for Ideas and Issues. Good day.